Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and the decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to SCOTUS Cast. I'm your host, Kyle Hammernis, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We are here today to discuss Sheets v. County of El Dorado, California, in which the Supreme Court issued a 9-0 decision on April 12, 2024. It is my honor to introduce our guests today, Nancy Marzulla and Jason Parsons. Nancy is a partner at Marzulla Law and authored an amicus brief in this case on behalf of Atlantic Legal Foundation. Joining Nancy to discuss the decision is Jason Parsons. Jason is an associate at Rutan & Tucker LLP and joined a brief in this case on behalf of the California Building Industry Association and the National Association of Home Builders. And with that, I'd like to turn things over to Nancy to get us started with the overview of the case and the majority opinion.
Well, thank you, Kyle, and thank you to the Federalist Society for inviting Jason and me to talk about this important property rights case. The Sheets case, George Sheets versus County of El Dorado, California, involves the unconstitutional conditions doctrine under the Fifth Amendment's Just Compensation Clause. In a nutshell, what this doctrine involves is a government imposing or conditioning approval of a permit application on the landowners agreeing to give something in exchange for that permit to the permitting authority. So, for example, in this case, George Sheets wanted to build a modest pre-manufactured home on his property in the county, and he complied with all the building permit applications and requirements and zoning requirements, and but for the fee requirement would have been granted the building permit. So the county comes in and says, "Here's your permit, Mr. Sheets. We'll hand it over to you just as soon as you give us close to $24,000. And this is the real kicker here. Regardless of what Mr. Sheets would do, plan to do or not do with this property, unless he paid this fee, he could not use his property. So the county tried to dress up or disguise its fee as some kind of legitimate public program by calling it a traffic impact mitigation fee. But in point of fact, there was no showing in the record that Mr. Sheets' development would in any way negatively affect traffic. In fact, the facts clearly showed that the plan came first, long before Mr. Sheets ever thought about developing his property. The way the program worked is that the county had mapped out and created zones for all the property in the county. And so when a building permit applicant would come to the county after determining that all the other requirements had been met, the county would then look to see where the property was located and then determine if the development, proposed development, was commercial or residential, and if so, whether it was single family residential or commercial. And then based on that, it would go to a chart and see how much the fee would be, plain and simple. In other words, there was absolutely no connection at all between the proposed development and the amount of the fee. But however, when Sheets challenged this permit fee or exaction, the California courts held that it could not be challenged under the Fifth Amendment because the fee was imposed through legislation. It was a countywide legislatively imposed condition on building applications. Had it been imposed administratively, i.e. just on Mr. Sheets after reviewing his permit application, the courts would have had to undertake a constitutional review. It would have had to look to the Nolan-Dolan test to determine whether the fee survived constitutional scrutiny. The Nolan-Dolan standards have been established by the Supreme Court over the years. The Nolan test came first, and in that case, the court held there has to be an essential nexus between the legitimate state interest and the permit condition. Obviously, there doesn't appear to be that, at least on the facts as we know them. And under Dolan, there must be a rough proportionality between the exaction and any burden created by the proposed development. So then that is the issue that the Supreme Court agreed to take. Whether a legislatively imposed permit exaction should be subject to the same constitutional scrutiny as administratively imposed permit exactions. And what we got as a result of the briefing and argument is a unanimous decision authored by Justice Barrett with three concurrences. And the decision that Barrett authors emphatically holds that regardless of how imposed, permit conditions must be subjected to the same Fifth Amendment scrutiny. In fact, by the time this case reached oral argument at the Supreme Court, there appeared to be such agreement on this issue that the county actually, during argument, agreed that there was no constitutional distinction between legislatively and administratively imposed conditions on a permit application, which I think this caught everyone off guard because this view was not expressed in the county's brief. Nevertheless, Barrett writes a thoughtful and thorough analysis of the decision before the court and includes in it a vigorous endorsement of strong property rights protection. I think this is one of the most important things to come out of this case is the fact that you've got all nine justices embracing this notion of vigorous property rights protection. So just briefly then to go into how Barrett analyzed the case, she first of all spends a significant amount of time kind of unpacking Nolan and Dolan again for the decision in the context of the decision. And I think it's very helpful to look at how her views on the cases, because these are very important cases that will be used and applied by lower courts and administrative agencies following this decision. But her decision in chief undertakes three analyses, and they're very scholarly, they're very detailed, rigorous, which one might expect from Justice Barrett. First of all, she does a textual analysis, and she writes that as far as the Constitution's text is concerned, permit conditions imposed by the legislature and other branches of government stand on equal footing. Once again, the Fifth Amendment's Just Compensation Clause is no poor relation to other constitutional amendments. Then she turns to the history of the Fifth Amendment, and she again goes through a careful review of the pre-constitution and post-constitutional application of eminent domain and its exercise. And she finds that the history supports a conclusion that legislation was a prime target for scrutiny under the Fifth Amendment. And then lastly, she turns to constitutional precedent. And there she notes that both physical takings and regulatory takings are analyzed with utter disregard to which agency or which branch of government imposed the restriction or confiscatory action on the property owner. So she finds no support for the distinction being imposed in this context. And then she finally goes to the other constitutional amendments and finds that likewise, with respect to, for example, she refers to free speech protections, she finds no distinctions in other contexts for applying any kind of legislative exemption. So with that, she issues her decision. And that, I think, now brings us to the concurring decisions. Jason, do you want to jump into that discussion?
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. And yeah, this is a really interesting opinion because, as one of the justices noted, you know, there's this radical agreement among the parties and apparently among the court, too, as to the outcome of the first question. But in answering the first question, you know, whether or not Nolan and Dolan applies to legislative acts as soon as administrative, you know, ad hoc fees, it doesn't, the majority opinion, I guess, squarely answers the question it was presented, but it doesn't reach the obvious second question, which is what next? And that is where the concurrences get, I think, quite interesting. We see Gorsuch, and they're all very short, by the way. They're very short concurrences, and they all basically say, we all agree as to the question presented, and then go on to explain maybe what's next when this gets remanded down and future courts have to take this opinion and deal with it. You know, we see Gorsuch with perhaps the most, supportive of a broad application of Nolan Dolan principles. He basically says he agrees with the majority, says, look, you know, the takings clause is not a correlation. And if that's true, then why are we, why would it be considered any different than other constitutional rights, in which we don't make distinctions upon the size of the class that the regulation or the restriction is applying to? And so he basically says, look, you know, nothing in Nolan Dolan, and I think importantly, he includes the words, or today's decision supports this distinction. That's an interesting line for reasons I'll explain in a second. Moving on to Kavanaugh's concurrence, he pretty much comes out and says, you know, here's what the decision doesn't address. And that is the common, you know, practice of imposing permit conditions such as impact fees, a new development through. And I think the troubling language here is reasonable formulas or schedules. That to me seems to indicate something of a test. And you know, if you sort of follow the breadcrumbs, you know, when this goes down in remand and courts have to figure out what this opinion means in practice, you know, some lower courts might look to that as offering a solution that the majority didn't really provide. And make no mistake, Gorsuch does too. So that's sort of the other side. And finally, Sotomayor had a concurrence as well. This seems to advance some sort of notion that this almost a two-step test for Nolan and Dolan, that there's a threshold question of whether or not the permit condition, you know, would be a taking outside of the permit context. You know, I think this is really addressed towards more broad issues with challenging maybe taxes. I think that came up during oral argument that she seemed concerned about that. So I guess I'm not too surprised that came out in her concurrence. And I think, Nancy, you may have some additional thoughts about Sotomayor's concurrence, but I did find it interesting in continuing with the theme of radical agreement among apparently everybody here. The party's response to this opinion was really fascinating to me. Paul Beard, the lawyer for George Sheets, at least one news article reported him as using the word thrilled with the result. And the county, again, seems to think that this opinion casts no doubt on local government's authority to impose reasonable permitting conditions. So it's a rare day when both the, you know, purported winners and losers of a decision come away happy. So this is a very interesting case. And I think when it goes back down, we're going to see lower courts grapple with, you know, do you go with the Gorsuch path? Do you go with the Kavanaugh path? Do you go some other way? And I think that's going to be where this case ultimately leads in the long run.
Jason, I agree with you. This is quite an interesting decision in terms of the what appears to be everyone now so thrilled with the ruling. I also agree with you that these concurring decisions are worth taking a good look at, because I think, as we all know, concurring decisions and dissenting decisions have a way of morphing into majority decisions over time. In fact, I note that in this case, the majority decision is basically Justice Thomas's earlier dissenting decision in another case. It's basically taking whole cloth what Justice Thomas wrote in that case in dissent. But here we've got, and I think you've done an excellent job, Jason, in talking about the concurrences. I'll just footnote Justice Sotomayor's concurrence, which jumped out at me, where the concurrence explicitly says there is an important threshold question to any application of Nolan-Dolan scrutiny. And I'm scratching my head and saying, oh, really? There's a threshold question we have to satisfy? And according to Sotomayor and Justice Jackson, you have to show, a plaintiff has to show that the permit condition would be a compensable taking if imposed outside the permitting context. I can tell you that as an attorney who represents plaintiffs in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, and in which DOJ is always the defendant, DOJ will take this provision and run with it, because they're constantly looking for procedural hurdles to affix to any aspect of the takings analysis they can do. So I think we can see this threshold question arise in these cases in future litigation. I think we've got litigation ahead that is going to come from these concurring decisions.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Nancy. And that's interesting. You know, I hadn't considered that before, but it really does, even though they are, simple concurrences, and in Gorsuch's case, just himself, they do, again, seem to present at least something for lower courts to latch onto for that second question, and almost as an a la carte option, you know, choose which concurrence the court seems to deem fit.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy and Jason, for giving a great analysis of the decision and its ramifications. Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to give?
So lastly, I would just like to note sort of some conclusions I've drawn from this case. I think the more I've thought about it, I think this case kind of represents NIC 2.0, you know, NIC v. Township of Scott. It really opens the door to challenge fees and exactions in a way that wasn't available before. So I would just say, you know, beware the naysayers. This case is, in fact, a big deal. I've seen a lot of rumblings that this is, oh, it's kind of this, you know, obvious result and not really going to go anywhere. I don't think that's true. I think in practice, you know, many public agencies have been sort of insulated from much, if any, scrutiny. And they may have an egregious sort of fee schedules that, you know, nobody has really had a chance to dig into. And so the more wary jurisdictions might address this on their own. But I think the opinion, no doubt, at the end of the day is going to require local agencies to really sit up straighter and sharpen their pencils. And quite frankly, there's now litigation, an avenue of litigation available for those who don't do that. And I would just say that, you know, with this kind of open question on the second part of what's next and these concurrences out there, you know, there's a real good opportunity for litigants to be first movers in this space to really establish precedent and answer this secondary question, which I think will no doubt happen over the next few years. So I think there's a good opportunity there for litigants to really have an impact in this space.
You know, I fully agree with you, Jason. That is such a superb point, because now we are kind of hearing like, well, what's the big deal? This was such an obvious result, and particularly since the county confessed error. But we have to recall that this case was hard fought in the trial court, hard fought in the California Court of Appeals, and then fought hardest of all in the Supreme Court. We had a huge number of amicus on both sides of the issue. I authored a brief for the Atlantic Legal Foundation, but there were many, many briefs on both sides of the issue. And the county had a lot of briefs arguing that this distinction was crucially important, and Western civilization as we know it would disappear if they lost this distinction and protection.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers. Founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental power is essential to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.